All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to Fitz Dog Radio, back from Las Vegas, Nevada today. I was out there for seven fucking nights. Let me tell you something. I've often said this. Vegas is a 36-hour trip. 7 days and seven nights. And look, don't get me wrong. I played at Brad Garrett's club. The people there could not be nicer, more professional, more welcoming, bent over backwards to make it a good trip. But I was outside, I'm not exaggerating, in 7 days, I was out of doors 25 minutes total. You just don't leave. You just get depressed and you gamble a little bit and then you lose and then you go into a shame spiral and then you go buy a sandwich and it's $26 and then you look at the people. I mean, the people in Vegas lose some weight. Here's what you don't see. Salad bars, all of the snack shops, nothing but garbage. People are smoking and there's a lot of limping. Everybody's limping. And if you're not limping, you're on one of those little scooters and not even having fun on the scooter. If I had a scooter in a casino, are you shitting me? I would be doing slalom between the slot machines. And I played craps, and I think crap must have been the worst curse word available when that game was invented, because if they invented it today, they have to call it motherfucker. Hey, man, you want to play some motherfucker? Now I'll be at the cunt table, but I'll see you later in the motherless whore pavilion. And then I played, I said, let me slow it down, because craps is the most fun. But I said, let me slow it down and play some blackjack, because I figured, how much money can I lose playing blackjack? Turns out, a tremendous amount. And I was getting these dealers that got 21s every fucking time. Like, some kind of weird witchcrafty shit was happening. Like, whatever island they're from in the Southeast Pacific, Southwest Pacific, Southern Pacific. It's just like ends up on 21 every time. At one point she gets a 2 and then she gets a 3 and then she gets a 16 of spades. I'm like, what? That's not a card. Anyway, we talked a lot about it on stage in Vegas, and my wife saved me. She came out for the final three nights for Valentine's Day. We had a nice Valentine's Day. The Ed, who works at the club, got me in at this nice Italian place, La Cucina, I think it was called, next door. They treated us great. They put us in a special private room, and it was all lovely. And my wife, sometimes you re-fall in love with somebody again, and we just had the kind of weekend where we just hung and flirted and made love. Can you say that at 58 without grossing people out? Watched movies. We watched the one about the priests, Conclave. I think it's called Conclave. We watched Tropic Thunder. We watched Shooter with Mark Wahlberg. Here's the thing about Mark Wahlberg. You know, he's not good. He's not a good actor. And he is so full of himself, but I'll watch him. I will absolutely watch him do a movie. We watched the SNL special. I had some thoughts on that. I'll get into another time. But yeah, it was great. Great. Brad Garrett was there. He does this thing where he comes in every other week. He comes in for a few nights of the week and he hosts the show. So the feature act, instead of doing 25, does 10. And then instead of me doing 40, I do about 20. And then Brad hosts the show, and he goes up, and he just destroys. He's just, he's 6'8", he's loud, he's funny as shit, and he just does old school Rickles kind of stand-up, and says shit that I can't believe he gets away with, but he does. And I'm telling you, people go, oh, you're going to Brad, you're going to meet Brad, great guy. That does not describe Brad Garrett. I mean, people say that and you go, all right, he's probably famous and rich, so he acts nice because he's got to get away with it. He doesn't want to seem like a douche, rich douchebag. This guy, to his core, is a generous, funny, good dude. Like, everybody came in the green room after the show. I mean, door guys, you know, comics from other clubs, and they would bring people in, pictures with everybody, asks you about yourself, genuinely cares. On Valentine's Day, me and Aaron went to dinner, and the check came, and they were like, it's all set. It was taken care of. They didn't even say who from, and it was Brad. Picked it up. We went we went gambling one night, me, him, and Jim Flanagan, who was the feature act, very funny dude from Chicago. We went, we hit the tables, played some craps and some blackjack, and, you know, he just kept buying us chips left and right. It was amazing. But just a fucking good dude. He's got, like, all these people that work at the... Did I talk? I don't think I talked about this last week. No, I hadn't met him yet last week. He's got all these people working at the club, and they were his... whatever. I don't want to tell his business. He's a mensch. He had a charity for terminally ill kids for like 20 years. And everybody at the club is like family to him. And his wife came in, and she was lovely. And anyway, great experience with Brad Garrett. Check out his club if you're ever in Vegas. It's a fun, small little room that has good crowds, good times. I bet on my cousin Denny McCarthy. I went to the sports book and I bet on Denny this week, and he was in the lead, and it was going to pay out, I forget the amount, 10-1 or something. And I put a bunch of money on him. How much? A lot. And he was in first place a couple times over the course of the weekend at the Genesis Invitational, which is a big tournament. All the big guys were there, Rory and Scheffler. And so he ended up coming in third place, did not win, but I was so inspired, and I was telling my friends all followed Denny the way I do. And so we all put $500 down on him to win the Masters, and if he wins, we get $90,000. So it's a good bet. It's a 20-1 bet right now. And we'll see. We'll see. I don't want to put pressure on him. I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but if you're going to win one, let's make it the Masters this year. But yeah, I was so proud of him. He played amazing. He's the best putter on the tour. Statistically, he is the number one putter on the PGA Tour. And he's only about 5'8", but he fucking cranks it out there. His drives are as long as anybody's. Solid player. So we'll see. We'll see. All right, I want to get to this soon because I think I did a kind of a longer podcast with my guest today. If you're in LA this week, I'm going to be at Largo Wednesday night, performing a show. It's Judd Apatow's show. Conan O'Brien will be on it, and somebody from SNL, I can't remember who. And then later that night, Wednesday night, I will be at the Comedy Store doing Louis Gomez's show. I think Jay Oakerson's on it as well. It's a game show where you tell stories. I have Story Wars, I think it's called. So check that out. And then Saturday night, I'll be in Fontana, California at Stage Red. That's February 22nd. And then coming to Atlanta, the Punchline, March 6th through 8th. Hollywood Improv, the annual St. Patrick's Day show. I'm happy to announce the music for the show will be Irish music performed by my buddy Mikey Fitzgibbon, along with my daughter on guitar and flute, and my son on guitar. So get there early. You don't want to miss the music. And then I'll be coming to Hamilton, Ontario, Toronto, Pittsburgh, Boston, Escondido, just announced in April, Tampa, La Jolla. go to fitzdog.com, get some tickets, come out and see some live comedy. My guests, it doesn't get better than this. I have these guys been dear friends of mine for 25 years. They are just great dudes. They're so funny. And every time they come on the podcast, it's a home run. We taped it last week. Laughed our asses off. I know you're going to love it. You know them from Dumb People Town, which is their podcast. They've had a few podcasts over the years. But they got a bunch of specials and albums. And they're on What We Do in the Shadows right now, which is pretty cool. They've been on everything from Curb Your Enthusiasm, Grey's Anatomy, whatever. We get into it on the podcast. But sit back, put on your headphones, and enjoy my chat with the great Sklar Brothers. All right, welcome to the show, Jason and Randy Sklar.
Yes.
You are, you know, it's when I think about my career and
old
I think
friends.
About the people that I can share common names and stories and places and gigs that we used to do, mm-hmm. and you know, you guys have been a part. You're in the fabric of my whole life.
Same, so much wonderful history back and forth. Every time I see you, it's like. There's a depth to you. You remind me why I love this business. Mm. Every time we see each other, whether it's like playing golf at some like Comedy Gives Back thing, or just hang out at the store, or you come to our podcast, we see yours. I mean, we have so many. We first moved here,
yeah.
Having like brunch at your house.
Oh,
like Kevin
right.
Kevin Meaney when he was married to a woman.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
a baby, with
having
baby.
Sex with her.
Having sex with her, he had a baby, yeah. had a kid.
He had gay sex with her, but it made a baby.
Isn't that amazing?
She didn't know she was having gay sex, but in his head
he was picturing
gay
a man
sex
around the front.
Yeah.
But it was. Like, those are seminal moments for us
yes.
as we, like, moved here and whatnot. So,
well, let's talk about
wonderful.
those brunches, because that was a time where we were all in a vulnerable place. We had been in New York, and we all had our place in New York. You know, we were doing
yeah.
Largo. We were doing the clubs.
New York was Luna Lounge.
Luna Lounge.
We both had shows on MTV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
We were doing Comedy Central stand-ups. But then we moved to L.A., and, I mean,
it's like
we're starting all over again.
In many ways. I remember going to a – we went to a open mic.
Oh, yeah.
Was it at the Roosevelt Hotel?
Yeah, Roosevelt. You're performing near the fountain in
the
Roosevelt
Hotel.
And we're like, wasn't Bamford on the show?
Someone asked us, are you going to – you got to sign up for the open mic. We're like, open mic? We were doing like – Stand Up New York and Comic Strip.
Five shows.
And, Gotham and Catch a Rising Star. We're doing all these shows. I'm like, okay, we now have to sign up for an open mic? Like, no way. And then Maria Bamford, we saw that she was on it and we were a huge fan of hers. And she had signed up for it. We're like, oh, well, we can do this.
Yeah.
And then she was great and we were great. And then it took a little while. We got past at the store
yeah.
first and it was just.
But those brunches were nice because people had told me when I moved to L.A., if somebody lives on the east side of L.A. and you're on the west side, you literally will see them once every 6 months.
Right.
And I was used to seeing
right.
you guys all the time in New York.
I know.
So I decided that I was going to have Sunday brunches. Started doing during football season.
That's right.
And me and Aaron had just
waffles.
Gotten married. And we had gotten three waffle makers as gifts.
Yes.
So
yes.
we just would crank waffles. And it was like Lisa Langang, Nick Swartzen, Zach Galifianakis, Mike Gibbons. Karen Kilgariff.
Kevin Meaney. Did Mike Royce ever come to one of those?
Oh, yeah.
Royce
definitely came.
Yeah.
We had all moved out within a year.
Right. And you guys were in the Santa Monica.
We were in Santa Monica. Right. And we would have brunch. We'd watch football. And I remember, like, in the fall, it would then nobody wanted to leave. We'd end up watching baseball that night.
That's how lonely
you guys
we were.
Yeah, so, yeah,
you,
yeah.
No. You guys were so generous. And I always saw you guys as, like, oh, yeah, you're mature, you and Aaron, like
yeah.
you guys were like a step ahead of like me and Amy.
Uh-huh.
And
well,
I
hadn't
just,
had kids yet.
No.
But you
still
were
looked up to you.
You guys
family,
were like a family like,
yeah.
unit. You were that one step ahead, and it was great. Those were really wonderful, and those kept us connected in so
yeah.
many great ways.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I mean, it is remarkable that we still see each other as we do this thing. And every time I see you do stand up, I'm always like, God damn it. I love how honest you are about everything on stage. I absolutely love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, love I mean, what Randy and I were saying as we were, you know, preparing to come do this show, we're like, there are very few people who have bits that have stayed with us for 35. You looking at your grandmother and blowing her hair like a dandelion milkweed.
Yeah.
It, to me, that's like, I put that, frame it, put it in a museum.
Put it in the
that
Smithsonian.
That is a classic. Hilarious. But classic, I'm like, that hilarious bit would, number one, we're like, it's so specific. Two, it is so funny. Three, everyone in the audience always laughed. That was so, always a killer bit.
I think the thing about the bit that worked is, well, the bit was that my grandmother's hair is thinning.
Thinning.
It's gray and thinning, and she looks like a dandelion. Whenever I see her, I get her in a headlock, and then I blow her hair like a dandelion.
And you would just go...
But that, I think the key to the bit is the headlock.
It just, I loved it.
I mean, and New York audiences loved it, and it was just, and that was the other thing about you back then, which was really inspirational for us, is that you really did material. Like, there were two types of comics in New York. There were comics who would come on stage and kind of go after the audience and come with the energy and do this and that. Not that you didn't have energy, but you came and you did jokes. You did bits that you wrote. It was about the writing. So for us, we're like, we have to write, we have to write, we have to write stuff. Like, you got to write good jokes that work everywhere. It works in New York. It works in LA. It works here. It works in Boston. I think we came and saw you in Boston. You and Jeff Ross were doing a thing at BU.
BU, right.
And were we on that show?
Yeah, you were on the show.
We came on the show. But like in D.C., we did a thing with you at the Kennedy Center. So like,
that's right.
We've been around this country, and all the bits just worked everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah.
Well, and I think when I think of your guys' bits, I think about how people were, including myself, work so piecemeal. Like, here's a funny dandelion joke, and then the next one's about getting my oil changed, and it's all over. And you guys do these like set pieces,
bits.
You do
bits.
No, they're chunks,
like a chunk.
There is a big meaty.
It's
chunk.
Like a song. I mean, that's what people said. It's like a 3 minute or 4 minute song.
REO Speedwagon? Are you kidding me?
That was.
I mean, that was ridiculous.
So silly,
over the top, annihilated every time.
Oh, but just also
that
just,
was your "We Are the World."
Yeah, that was our "We Are the World."
Yeah,
that was
for
meanie.
R.I.P.
Did you guys ever pull that one out?
No,
God, no.
But here's the thing about stand up, and I lament this. The comics that we saw, because, you know, remember the Friars Club in New York, and you had all those
absolutely
old Borscht Belt comics like Freddie Roman. And,
yeah. Oh
my and God. Those guys.
Alan King.
They never did TV, and so they just
kept
worked
doing
on
the old
same
bits
routine
over and over. Yep.
And they'd cycle old stuff back and forth. And like, there's a part of me that's like, I love, like when you just said that dandelion bit, I was like, fucking do that.
Do it again.
You should. Why is it that we're not allowed to do that?
You are. I mean,
I always say comics and bands are the opposites. When you go, as you're a fan and you go to see your favorite band, and they
like,
say,
I'm going
to
play the new album front to cover.
Like, get out of here. If you're a comic and you utter, like, and you have fans there and you utter one phrase that you've uttered before, you'll come out to the line where people are afterwards, they're like, you know, I wish you would do all new. And you're like, what are you saying?
I know.
That was one phrase. So it's the exact opposite. They just want to see the new stuff. Give me new.
Yeah, but then you got a guy like Bobby Lee, who I don't think writes a ton, but his bits are so, they're such act out bits.
Yeah.
And they're so performative.
Yeah.
That I really don't get sick of watching them.
I could watch him.
So what Bobby's figured out with the podcast too is that his, and I think he's brought a lot of what he does on his podcasts, plural, onto the stage, and like now people are coming who have seen him and understand the full context of who he is, and like he can just be himself on stage.
Well,
and
that's
like
the beauty of the podcast stand-up combo, is that normally if you're, because look, if I just played three improvs in 3 weekends
where
I did Raleigh, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I did Nyack, New York. Mm-hmm. And I did Milwaukee.
Nice.
And the thing is, like, you know, Milwaukee's like, They're like 500 seats. I'm doing five shows.
Oh my God.
I'm not selling 2,500 seats.
No, you're not.
So they end up getting people coming in because they market really well, and they and you know, they I was selling out shows, but half the people didn't know who I was.
Right. So you got to earn it.
So you got to earn it. As opposed to you do a smaller show, and you don't have to say, you know, I like feet. They just know I like feet because right. They've listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
And now I go right into the joke.
Yeah, right.
You know,
that's
and it's
right.
The same thing with you guys and your relationship and your rhythm. Like, they're already attuned to it. And
right.
It's almost like a primer for the stand-up.
I mean, the worst... James, what's happening? The worst thing is when you go into a city and people see you and they're like, hey, what are you guys doing here? And
yeah, like, no, I know.
I
not marketing our show very
right.
well.
We did not do that right here.
But that's the thing is I see like... When I see these people come out at the improvs and they see me and they go, I loved you. You were great on I Love the 80s. That person did not find out about the show from me.
No.
But the improv sent out
the thing.
Blasts.
That's right.
And they said, oh, yeah, I know that guy. From I'll go to the show.
So right. I'm okay with that.
No, my point is, why aren't I reaching those same people?
Right.
Because
for your podcast,
we have enough passive fans because
yes.
We've done so
yeah.
I love the 80s
yeah.
and all that stuff
oh, yeah.
like
yeah,
people see that and it's enough for them to go oh good
yeah.
I'd like to see as opposed to if they were to market a guy who's brand new they're not going to get the same response from that passive crowd
right yeah
but I mean, why can't we reach that passive crowd
That's what we need to figure out.
Right.
This is all part of the thing. You know, we all got into comedy to be mid-level marketers.
Exactly. I know.
Jeez.
You know, Jesus.
Listen, it's...
Gonna wear a V-neck and a...
Orvis vest.
Like an Orvis vest. We were just down in La Jolla doing the Comedy Store. First time we've ever done it. I mean, we normally...
So much fun.
So much
best
fun.
Best room.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
The
Unbelievable.
Best room. And we yeah. were like... And with room to grow the next time we come down there, but like we were super happy with how many tickets we sold, super happy with the deal, love the audiences.
You
the
can walk away with
great.
Some money.
Yeah,
out of it.
The crowds
yeah.
were great. I was
yeah.
like, I love this. And then the vibe was great. Exact opposite of the American Comedy Company downtown, which we've had some good shows there.
Fuck that place.
But I'm just saying, like, I'm saying we've had some good shows, but that area of San Diego is just a giant fucking
yeah,
mess.
Yeah.
It is like a drunk, it is like being inside of a drunk girl's vagina.
It's called the Lamplight District?
The gas lamp.
Gas lamp. Oh, it's what, when you think of San Diego, you think of physical beauty and human waste. Like, it's just a bunch
of
white, yuppie...
People go down to San Diego. This is my theory about San Diego. People go down to San Diego to just, they're like, tune out. Don't tell me about anything. I don't want to read
yes.
books.
Yes.
I don't want to know what's going on in the
right.
world. Don't tell me anything. I'm down here to retire. I maybe have seen too much shit in the military.
Yeah.
I'm down here, and I'm like... Don't tell me about anything.
We said it's a very chill place, but our joke was there's a very thin line between super chill and lazy,
right?
Yeah.
Like, and San Diego sometimes
you cross that line.
Yeah.
Like flip flops, chill. Flip flops at a funeral, lazy.
That's lazy.
I don't care if it's a burial at sea. You show your God
open
yeah,
casket,
right,
fine.
Right,
open
right,
toe,
right.
I don't like
right.
it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Walking around with your shirt off,
yeah.
chill. Walking around with your shirt off at 60 with no sunblock, and
right.
now you have a sunburn.
At a custody
that's
hearing,
that's
not
lazy.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're like, you know, the just even the name Ocean Beach to us was hilarious.
Hanging out on your sailboat, chill.
Chill.
Living on it, lazy.
Where were you?
That's the other thing. So our joke was
Ocean
yeah,
Beach.
Ocean.
Laziest name for a beach ever. Ocean Beach.
Why is it called Ocean Beach? Because it's by the ocean.
Every beach is by the ocean.
And then our joke was
Sandy Beach taken?
Was Beach not taken? Was another example that we would have thought up, but we've been hanging out in San Diego so much that we've gotten lazy.
That's such
even
a killer.
Even the seals.
That's such
they
a
don't
killer.
Even swim. The seals just lay around. You know? A chill seal.
We're adding this. We're adding
the
this.
A chill seal, you know, cruises around the harbor.
Yeah, this guy just lay
up.
On rocks.
Like, there are seals that balance balls on their
right,
noses.
Right, that's a chill.
Like, I came down to San Diego to do nothing.
Yeah.
Don't fucking make me balance a ball. Don't do
I'm retired.
This isn't the circus.
Yeah.
It's San Diego.
I was a Marine SEAL. I've been to Afghanistan. Afghanistan.
That's a good one.
Isn't that water there?
No,
is there water in it?
I think it's pretty dry in Afghanistan. I was a SEAL in Afghanistan.
And then I was like, did SEAL Heidi Klum's ex-husband fight in Afghanistan? I don't remember.
But anyway.
Is that how he got the scratch? All right, I'm done.
So, I mean, it was from, you know, we had a wonderful time down there. Our first time down there, I'm like, oh, we will
forever
go. But
those are people that all know you.
Yeah,
fans.
There was a majority of them were excited that we were there.
Yes.
And came to see us. And as a result, you know, you have that, you know, there's the common
shows
language.
Were fun. Our early show Friday, which typically, early show Friday, they're a little tight.
Yeah.
Late show, they're drunk because they don't know how, they worked exhausted. All day, they're exhausted. Yeah. Early show Friday can be good, but sometimes they're a little tight. Was maybe one of our favorite sets that, like, in recent memory that we did. It was like, we got up there, we got into it, we're doing our stuff, and you kind of know where your set's going. You know when it's, like, about to land. And I was like, we're here already? I can't believe we're here already.
Right.
It was joyful.
My niece is a waitress there. I got her a job as a waitress.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she's from New York, and she graduated college, and then she moved out. And I got her a job as a waitress, and it's like,
What's her name? Do we meet
Julia
her?
Julia Gale. She's she's very attractive, and she's very outgoing.
Yeah.
And she was a big hit. She got to the club, and her whole social life is everybody there, and she just talks about
they're
what
nice
a great
people.
Environment it
they're
is.
They're fucking great people. Yeah. Anyway, it was super nice down there, and beautiful. And we're like, we got down there, we drove down there, and we said, this is what a stand-up weekend should be. They put you in a hotel. You're hanging out down
the
there.
Seaview Hotel. It's like a cool old 50s
hotel. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love it.
It's an old hotel, which is like not too nice, not bad. It's in the middle.
And again, Seaview? It's next to the ocean. Yeah, exactly. Obviously.
You got a view of the sea.
Seaview.
Get more creative.
And we played a little golf.
You did.
We did a couple rounds.
Went up to Encinita Hills, and you played another round. But I had to drive back up because my younger daughter got into college. Like, she was like, found out.
Yeah.
I started driving up and she's like, the email's here. So I literally drove from La Jolla up to her school in Eagle Rock, picked her up early from school. We went home, opened up the email, all of us together. And then she got in and I.
Wait, was that the clip I saw on the internet?
Yeah. She got in, I drove
right
back down.
That was such a cool clip.
Joyful clip.
Yeah. That's
joyful
nice.
Moment. We don't show a ton. We're not like, we don't pimp our kids because they're older, as you don't really either, but like, that was a moment that I'm like, our fans would love to see this.
Now, I remember the moment when my daughter said that she hates school and maybe she'll take a couple classes at Santa Monica College.
And
I remember
you posted that.
We
did,
were all huddled
gathered
around
her.
Yeah. To see.
My daughter could still get there, so.
God willing. To see her put down the crack pipe for minutes.
The truth
to
is,
let us take this.
This
video.
This is what I've realized, is certainly from her, is like we're trying to get her to the finish line of school. That like, it's not for everybody. Like this path and this thing. That's what I learned, and you learn that about your kids. It's like this. The path that you think is going to be the path, like your kid might just be like, F school, I hate it so much. Some of the smartest people I know never went to college
it took me a year to wrap my head around that, and then I realized she struggled through high school. She's got ADHD, she's got everything, and until she finds out what she's passionate about, it doesn't make sense for her
to continue down this path.
She doesn't enjoy it enough or feel like I went to college. I took a year off after high school. I traveled around the world.
Did you really?
By the way, that's so.
Who told you to do that?
Oh, well, I didn't think I'd ever go to college. To be perfectly honest,
did you
want to
be a comic?
I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to write novels.
Okay.
And so I said, I'm not going to school. And so I worked for 6 months as I was a parking attendant at a country club and a cook at TGI Fridays.
Amazing.
Two jobs. I saved up. Ready for this? $3,000, which
at the time
was like a fortune.
Like
enough to travel for 6 months.
Like if you were to do it today, that'd be like $30,000, right?
So I get a backpack and I hitchhike around. I find a spot in Ireland where my grandfather was born.
Right.
And I rent a little cottage and I wrote a book. I wrote a novel. And
amazing.
I fell in love with this bartender at the Atlantic Pub in Kenmare.
Oh my God.
And I dedicated it to her. And it was in a thick notebook. You know, it was like 150 pages.
Yeah.
And I was every night I would write all day and then I'd go to the pub and I'd flirt with her.
Oh my God.
And I think I kissed her a couple times. It was like nothing, but I dark red hair and green eyes and pasty white skin.
Can you still get together
with her? And the accent. No, I'll tell you the follow-up. So anyway, I give it to her. Uh-huh. I give it to her, and she told me it was brilliant the next day. And I didn't realize in Ireland, people can say, like, your bike is brilliant. Like, yeah, it's just a... Yeah.
You're like...
Those shorts are brilliant.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
what?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not rainy today. Brilliant.
Brilliant, yeah. And so anyway, she kept it.
At least she didn't say it was
mental. And I moved on to the next town, and I left my first novel with this woman. And I came
back...
No backup. I came back 10 years later. I went to the Atlantic Pub, uh-huh. and I asked for her. And I was with my wife.
Yeah.
Which Maybe not a great
moment.
Idea.
Great moment for
and
the
they
wife.
Said she's up in Belfast.
What did you tell your wife who this person was?
Oh, no,
was?
I told her.
You told everything. Okay,
yeah. No, she's got her past too, believe
like,
me.
Like, this is a friend I used
to. Yeah.
She gave me a kidney. I forgot to say that. And that's, I owe her this visit. I owe
she
her.
Gave me 2,000 pints of Guinness and then and, a kidney.
And then as they're going to get her, you just whisper to your wife at the bar, I'm still not over her. Hey!
Kind of not.
Hey.
But she was getting married that weekend. When I went to the Atlantic
the weekend
pub.
You came
and
back 10 years.
She was still working at the fucking pub.
No
she
way.
She would have been there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Who was your first love? Did you ever say I love you to anybody besides your wife?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. High school. Oh, yeah.
Is there one that stays with you? Like, I had a girlfriend from college that I still think about. Like, she was a good person.
There were a lot. I dated good people. There were a bunch. I mean, not that I think about on a daily basis or even in a like periodically, but yeah, if I sit down and go, the people I was lucky enough to be with along the way,
yeah.
some great ones. Camp Ramah, which is a Jewish summer camp, like, yes, girlfriends from that and Israel trips and other like summer programs were really where I feel like we ended up connecting
because we liked our high school. We definitely liked our high school. We went to high school in like a white trash part of
St. Louis.
Really?
Not that
white
yeah,
trash.
Yeah,
it was more like
our
just...
color, school colors were acid and wash.
Thank
if
you.
That makes sense. We had a smoking lounge. Did you have a smoking lounge in your
yes.
high school?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
for
yeah.
the teachers.
For the students.
No, there was an alley behind the...
This was a lounge.
It was a loading dock.
Really?
Indoors?
Outside. Right outside.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like an atrium outside.
Yeah.
Where just kids who are like, yeah, I got to climb the rope next period.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
You know, and it's like smoking out. And we'd be looking out there. We'd be like, we know she shouldn't be smoking because she's pregnant. But I mean, like, that was the high school we went to, and we loved it. And like, kind of the honor students at our school were really smart and
yeah.
really cool. And
but
those,
our creative people, the people we like connected with, who we would like share our dream, because we were already wanting to do comedy in high school.
Were you doing theater?
We did a little theater.
Yeah.
And then we did stand up in high school.
You did.
High school, we were doing stand up.
86. 86 was the first time we stepped on a stage. We did it again. We did it at a local comedy club. Like, we did it our senior year. Like, we really were like dialed into this whole other thing that our high school friends could not get.
Because St. Louis is a town, you know, where, and was when our dad grew up there. Where you grow up there, maybe you go to Mizzou, maybe you go to KU, maybe you go to Illinois.
And you come back.
Indiana, and then you come
well,
back.
Well, we say, that, I mean, our joke when we go back and do stand-up in St. Louis is that what high school did you go to is a pickup line in St. Louis.
What high school? In no other city is it like, what high school did you go to?
And that's, it's so they can make a snap judgment about you. Like, Ladue High School, I can get cocaine from this guy. Okay, this, that. We said, what high school did you go to as a pickup line in St. Louis? What high school do you go to as a pickup line for Matt Gaetz?
There you go.
Hold it. I can't believe you didn't hold it longer.
I wanted to hold it.
Where's my
still
camera?
In Congress? All right. So, no, but that... That is, it's provincial in that way that people, it's very much like, this is where we're from and this is where we stay.
So we met creative people like through Jewish youth groups and summer camp. And
I heard
fun.
these Israel trips, people fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was madness. It was
fun.
Madness.
Touring
fun.
Around. It's basically like a guided tour around the country. And
with a bunch of young, fun, cool.
That's where we met Eric Friedman. Eric Freeman on the field trip in high school.
Yeah,
we met him and we were like immediately drawn to him because we're like, oh, this guy's so funny. And the three of us were like.
And then like all of our friends and all of his friends. And then we had all these friends. It was like a network of friends around the country. And then this like, these cool girls from Canada. Like they were so cool. And it was like, I literally had a
Canadian girlfriend.
And you wouldn't be lying.
She wasn't fictitious. Right.
From camp.
She was real.
Canadian girlfriend from camp.
Like, but everything about it sounds like bullshit, but it was real.
Yeah.
I loved her. She was so cute.
And you go into those
everyone's Jewish.
Everyone's Jewish.
And do they have classes at the thing for running the media or banks?
No,
like,
they
do you have a choice?
You automatically go into that and they assume you just know.
Right. You learn a couple handshakes.
Isn't that a great moment when we realized, like, in our lives, like, we knew the Nazis and the far right hated us, and now the far left hates us as well. So now we can say, hey, we're bringing these two sides together.
True.
Like, we've given you common ground.
Yeah.
You're welcome, bitches.
Right.
Welcome. Common ground. You all hate us.
Take it and run.
So, I mean, but yes, it was one of those moments where you're like, oh, these... That's where we met other people who were creative. That's where we would like, you know, for us back then, we'd have friends in Kansas City or Minneapolis or wherever. And this is before the internet, before FaceTime, before, you know, anything. But we'd make like funny sketches on a tape and we'd mail it to them.
On a VHS tape.
On an audio tape.
Yeah.
And then they would send a VHS tape back. And then it was like sort of comics.
Like we had friends that were videographers for bat mitzvahs.
And weddings.
And weddings in Kansas City. And like they'd have people at the wedding, you know, record messages for...
Is there anything you want to say to the bat mitzvah or the bride and groom?
And then it's like, congratulations, we're so happy. And then get like an old Jewish couple to say this to our friends. And so like we'd have a list of like old Jewish couples being like, Randy, quit playing with yourself or whatever. It's like so funny. And like, I'm like,
but when you guys first got to New York, you were doing video stuff, weren't you? Didn't you guys like have like little underground kind of stuff?
Yeah,
you
we
were
did
shooting?
Stuff like that. Yes, we did. We did do stuff like that. We were like of the mindset, luckily, thankfully, and we tell new people this all the time who are like, how do I get into comedy? We're like, you got to make stuff. You just
how
have
do I get
to
into comedy?
Stuff.
You do comedy.
You do comedy, you
You're
make
just literally
stuff.
Like
yeah.
People today that, you know, I get friends that go, oh, I got my friend's nephew starting comedy and he wants to, you know, meet for coffee and pick your brain. I go, pick my brain? Get on fucking YouTube. What do you want to pick my...
I mean...
Pick my brain.
So there are a million ways.
I'm a 58-year-old guy. What am I going to tell you about getting into comedy as
a
21-year-old?
What you can't... There's things you can't tell them because there are people who are ridiculously successful just, you know, on TikTok. Or they become... There are a million ways you can do it. More ways than what
We tell people the industry will let you know.
Yeah,
like
right,
you
right.
just start doing the thing
yeah,
that
yeah.
you think is
They'll
the funniest
find you,
thing.
Because there's money to be made.
Sure.
And young
and if
comedians.
And if you're good.
This one kid, somebody wanted to meet me with him, so I look him up on Instagram. The kid's got 600,000 followers.
Great.
I got 100. You want to pick my brain? Let me pick your brain.
Yeah.
Because no, they're like, how? Yeah, that's right. You could pick the brain about that, but, you know, I mean, it is miraculous. We say the miracle is that we're still enjoying working in this industry. That is the miracle.
Right.
Because I think that's what they're really asking. It's like, how do I sustain a career in something like this? I mean, it's...
Well, that's your parents. They either gave you a work ethic. Like my father taught me because he was in radio and he had years where he didn't work. Like literally in high school, he had like 2 years where he did not work.
In high school, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Were you guys, was your family panicked in those moments or did he keep...
They never showed it if they did, but...
So he was let go from one radio job and you're waiting to find another and he didn't want to move you around the country because he probably had like Wichita is going
to... No, because he also did TV commercials, so he had to stay in New York.
Yeah.
He would make... The radio turned into a showcase for his voice to do voiceovers for commercials.
Got it. Amazing.
He would literally not audition. They would just say, oh, we want Bob Fitzsimmons because he's got the soft, female-friendly voice that we like.
Right.
But anyway...
Just like you.
You know, but he but he would smoke 3.5 packs a day, so he had a little bit of a gravel in there. But he, you know, he taught me that if you're going to go into this career where there's going to be downtimes, save your fucking money, invest it wisely, spend less than you make, buy real estate, put your money in stocks. Like, he had yellow notebooks filled before computers,
right,
filled with, you know, quotes on his stocks every month.
I mean, that is amazing that your dad was in a business that is adjacent. I would say adjacent to or connected to our business. Right. That is miraculous.
Well, we're sitting in front of a microphone.
I know, we are. And like, I think about that time when you were on Howard Stern, like they were testing out who's going to be like the new Jackie, and you were on there, and I was like, to me, that must have been a full circle moment for you, given the fact that your dad was
probably going into that
in
building.
New York to go in.
Well, the crazy thing is Howard used to shit on my dad in New York. That was his thing. He would shit on all the other announcers. So he used to. My father used to host the Jerry Lewis telethon, and he was the New York host for it. Mm-hmm. And so you go, oh, you got to be some kind of a has-been to be hosting a telethon. And Fitzsimmons is washed up.
So
he said all this horrible shit about my dad, and my mom
hated him. Of course.
My dad kind of got it. He knew what he was doing, but they had the same agent. They both had Don Buchwald as their agent.
No way.
Yeah. And Don Buchwald, my father was his first client. My father introduced Don to all the different station managers in New York. He got him started in radio, got him his first clients, all that stuff. So they were like this.
Yeah.
And he just died, God bless him, 6 months ago. Wow. But, so when I was about to go on Stern, I was like, the first time I went on, I had won the Aspen Comedy Festival. I got some trophy.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, this guy's kind of on the radar now. Let's bring him in. So they invite me to come in, and I'm like, what the fuck? Am I being set up here?
Yeah.
So I'm going in on a Monday. Uh-huh. I listened to the show on Friday, and he had the week off the week before, so they were playing reruns. On the rerun, it's him shitting on my father.
No way.
Oh, my God.
Did they know that?
I'll never know, but I went in on Monday, and now I got my fist clenched. I'm ready.
Ready to fight.
I got plenty of shit to say to Stern. And he comes on, and he goes, Greg, I just got to tell you something. Your father was one of the great guys in this. In an industry where people are not well-liked, everybody loved your father. He goes, he taught me so much about how to enter. He just went on. His love song to my dad.
Did you play that for your mom? Did she get to hear that?
She listened.
Okay.
She listened.
So then maybe that helped her.
She never got over it.
No.
Yeah, Irish broads, they never get over it. But then, and then
just like the woman boiling a potato, being like, I'm going to fuck him up.
Yeah.
Just like the woman never got over your novel. But anyway.
She's marrying another guy with the novel on the back of her dress.
Have you ever done material? Because Kevin Meaney's advice to me was, do an act you can do in front of your mother. And I was always like, I can't do it. But you guys, you seem like you probably
There's a lot that we can do in front of our mom. There's a lot. And there's a lot that she, but by the same token, we're always like, we want to push it. So example, in next Tuesday, we're hosting the VES Awards.
The Visual Effects Awards. I saw that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's 1,200 people at the Beverly Hilton. It's like studio heads. I had to like buy a tuxedo because
I'm spending the money I'm making on a tuxedo.
Smart.
You guys should be paying us more. But nonetheless, we're doing this show and we're like writing. So we said, okay, here's the monologue. I mean, like,
dude, send it to me. I'll punch it up.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah. Sure.
So we wrote, and the thing is, the person who is the head of VES is like an extraordinarily sensitive person. It's like the worst setup for comedy.
I get it. Like she gets all the complaints and she gets probably a ton.
And probably gets a ton from these people who...
Wait, is she the CEO or she's the one who hired you?
So she's the CEO. The group that hired us is the producers of this show.
Robin Reinhart.
Robin Reinhart is part of it.
Old talent person from MTV
and VH1. So she's wonderful. I love Robin. Yeah. Robin's the best.
And we've hosted like the Critics' Choice Award reality show. We've done a decent job for them before.
So we're like pitching these are the jokes and like they're coming back like this is can't say this. And what I realized is
You had to screen the jokes by them?
Well, we also had the last time we hosted the Real TV Awards, we wrote all these. The first time we did it was great, and everything was great. The most recent time we did it, we had
Megan Gailey. You know Megan Gailey, great comic and great like writer and whatnot. She's written on the ESPYs and written on a bunch of things. We said, "Do you want to come and just help us like write some stuff?" And she said, "We paid her, and it was great. It was awesome." But we wrote a lot of stuff, and we like went in on these. I mean, we went in hard on these people, and the jokes were really funny. But we didn't realize
making jokes out to people who are on reality TV shows. These are like people who are on reality TV shows. They don't watch the other shows. So they're so self-indulgent.
They're
also like so set. Like they think that they're superstars. So it was like,
so people did not like these jokes weren't getting what we thought they should be getting.
So much so. And we did a bit. We wrote like such a crazy bit. I don't even know why we did this. Our friend Brad Morris came on as like, he was like a new PR guy for the worst guy on a reality show.
Tom Sandoval, who's on Vanderpump Rules.
We're like,
everybody hates him.
He's like, I'm his new PR guy. And we're like, what is your name?
He's like David Hitler. Hitler. We're like,
that can't be your name.
He's like, I'm taking the heat off of him.
He's like, it's working. It's totally working.
It's working.
See you guys later. We're like, don't raise your hand.
They did not like it. Like a table full of like America's Next Top Drag Queen. Like they were not psyched about that.
Yeah.
They did not like it. So much so that someone came on stage and was like, I don't know what was going on with that bit. You know, whatever. Like someone else. Like
I'm hosting this next year. And we're like, no one asked.
Although, meanwhile, these people are corroding the fabric of society with their garbage today. Yeah.
So, like, I'm hosting it next year. We're like, you'll fail, but you don't understand. So because of that experience, we are coming into this bigger experience where it's like 1,200 people. We don't want to do what we want to do
you want to bounce it off.
We want to succeed.
Bit.
I don't
absolutely.
Want
to.
Yeah.
So like there. So we literally, this is the younger versions of us.
Yeah.
Would, you know, be like, you can't tell us what we can say and what we can't say. We're comedians. Don't you dare give us notes on our stuff.
Yeah.
The older, more seasoned versions of us set a Zoom call with them yesterday and we said, okay, guys, this is where we're at and this is where our heads are at and this is it. We know this stuff that we're saying, like that, hey, we're the perfect guys to be hosting the show right now. We're in 2025, just two old white guys. We're not even we're not even two old white guys. We're the same white guy twice. Like that says that, whatever. We know that these jokes, where we do them on stage, they work. So we're taking stuff from that we've done in every, but we also know that you know your audience better than us. And so if I want to talk about these things and why you're saying don't do this. And like, maybe there's a version that we can do. And we had a very mature conversation with them and they helped us and they're now on our side.
Yeah.
And it was like such a better way to handle it. The young version of us would have come in
hot
and like, what? You don't know what, you know?
Dude,
and
I have sabotaged more situations because of my problem with authority. I mean, I just have gone so out of my way to buck notes
to
the end that like corporate bookers don't work with me anymore because I would go
so
in.
So my wife was like getting all mad that like they're telling us that we can't say this and that on the things. And I was like, that's not the point. Like we told them, look, here's what we're grappling with. We want to do something that we feel like doesn't embarrass you and certainly doesn't make the crowd, like we don't want it to fail because it's too edgy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're standing up there and it's us. If we say something that's rounded edge, not as funny, we're gonna pay the price for
it.
So that's what we're dealing with. And like to actually bring that out to them and say, let's try and figure this out together was
well, part
like the
of it
smarter
is
way
tone,
to do it.
You know, like obviously you guys have a voice you've honed for 35 years, but
Tom Cruise is not here tonight, which is a bummer because apparently he does all of his own visual effects.
I like that joke.
I don't
he doesn't get it.
He does all of his own. Do you guys get it? He does all of his own stunts.
Yeah.
You know, that's
Greg doesn't like it, so that's scrapped. Will Smith is not here tonight, which is good for us as comedians on stage.
Yeah, that's good. Can I like, be on the next Zoom call with you guys?
Yeah, it would have been 2-on-1. It would have been 2-on-1,
he's
though.
He's not here. He's actually remodeling the house on his son's head. You saw that on the Grammys?
Yeah.
His son is the only kid who's on Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, and now Zillow.
That's good.
These are good jokes.
I like that a lot.
And we did a joke about, and so this was one that we fought on, okay? We had a joke about Inside Out. Inside Out. You know that movie? Your kids are too old now to watch it, but Inside Out is a very, very, very successful Pixar movie
where they take like
inside emotions.
Oh, right,
like
right,
Lewis
right,
Black.
Right. No, I heard it's amazing.
He's amazing. Lewis
Richard Kind played a guy.
Lewis Black plays anger. In. Amy Poehler plays joy. It's a beautiful, very introspective view inside of like there's a story of a kid, like a young girl who's like playing hockey, and it's all inside of her brain.
It's a little bit borrowed from Big Mouth, isn't it?
Have you seen Big Mouth? This came I think the
no,
first.
No, Big Mouth came first.
Big Mouth came before?
Yes.
Possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But a little.
He might have been developing it for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how long they were working on this, but it's a really, really great idea. So our joke was that it's nominated tonight, but there's a new emotion that was put into this year's thing that's up for an award, anxiety. We're like, Randy and I got a hold of a list of emotions that were. That reject.
These are rejected emotions.
These are the emotions.
That was like a Letterman bit.
So of all the emotions.
Yeah, Paul just, on the thing. Of all that. The emotions, these are the most rejected.
Paul, we just said that. All right. So we said one of our emotions that we picked.
Sarcasm.
Sarcasm were like, they wanted to be in it, but based on tone, they thought they didn't want to, so they were fired.
Gaslighting
was hired, then didn't show up, then blamed the film. And you're like, why is it the film's fault? That's not cool. And then the last one we had was performance anxiety. Which obviously it's a kids' movie. We can't have that in the thing. So, but then we went further on that. Our joke was like, you know, and look, it happens to a lot of guys, and from our experience, as we've been told, it's a normal thing that happens to a lot of guys. Like we just kept going,
yeah.
And they're like, you can't keep going.
No. They said you can't do it, and we're like, what if we cut it shorter? Uh-huh. What if we just cut this shorter and just said performance anxiety? It's a kids' movie
for obvious
reasons. And they're like,
oh, I think I said couldn't get up for the role. I think that was my thing.
Okay.
And they didn't like that. And I'm
wow.
like, so, but.
That's
you know,
when you do it.
I mean, maybe we'll do that on
yeah,
stage.
Yeah, maybe
we
do it.
Maybe
anyway.
We do all.
Yeah.
We
well,
feel
the
room.
You always have to go 10% past what
you
they
feel
say
the
you
room
do.
And you go and
right,
you push
right,
it.
Right.
We also like.
Now, that's an interesting question. When you say feel the room. You, are you guys that in sync that you are making joke choices
yes.
on the fly
yeah. yes,
together?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Or we just trust.
That's amazing.
We trust the other person. And what we have, which is great, which other comics don't have, is if he decides to push a button and goes too far and the crowd doesn't like it, I can be like, good call to push the envelope on that one, Rand.
Oh.
My brother, who doesn't know where the line is. And so
I
then
like
it becomes
that.
A battle between the two of us.
Yeah.
They can laugh at that. We give them permission to laugh at me berating him for making a bad decision.
Is Randy usually the one that pushes it further?
I don't think
no,
so.
We've no, both, we've both
yeah.
we've both crossed the line
right.
and things haven't worked. And you're like, okay, way to go, Jay.
Yeah.
Good call. Great
uh-huh.
call.
Oh,
these people
hilarious.
Are really happy that you yeah. made that joke. Right
my
there.
Favorite is when you guys walk on stage and you go, we're Jason and Randy. We identify as us, we.
As they, them.
They, them.
Yeah. So we're going to do that. We're going to do that. So we said we identify as they, them, but only when we're on stage together.
It's the only
and the
time.
Sad part is we get paid like a he.
Right. The other half of the joke is sometimes we get paid like a she, and that's bullshit.
There you go.
Not that we get paid like a she, but there's a gender pay gap at all. Let's be honest, you guys. Come on, raise the floor a little bit. Okay, whatever.
I had a joke. So this is true. That, you know, they're putting a woman's face on the $20 bill. They're finally going to put a woman's face
great.
On, which is great news for women. Bad news for the $20 bill. Now it's only going to be worth
$17.
That's so
good.
It's great.
So,
it's
so
no
good.
Dandelion joke, but it's
bad news for good. Money.
All right, a couple of things I want to ask you about.
Sure. Yeah.
Are you? What's this? What we do in the shadows? You guys are on that show.
Yeah. So we.
I mean, that's huge.
Huge. So fun.
Last season. So the
season
fifth season
four.
Was the final season. Done.
Season four.
Yeah.
We get this audition. It comes to us, and we're like, "Was this? This is so good. Was this written for us? It's like so well written."
Is it for twins?
It was.
It was for twins. And it was like a Property Brothers type thing where they come to the vampire house to
oh, that's great.
Redo it.
Yeah.
But it's shot like
an HGTV reality show.
So
not like their dark
brighter,
regular show.
There's like lower thirds of like other shows that don't exist. And it's like they shot a whole promo. So we do it. And my daughter, who's at Michigan right now, who's wants to be a director, I'm like, will you shoot us doing the audition? Like we have self-tape here. And Paul Sims. You know Paul Sims?
Sure.
You ever work with him?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He's like the showrunner on there.
Gary Shandling.
Yeah, I mean.
Shandling.
Yeah. Shandling, Frasier. I mean.
Yeah.
Atlanta. I mean, he's unbelievable.
Atlanta, right.
Unbelievable.
So good. So good.
So he's like, so it comes in and we shoot it. And Daisy was like, okay, try this. I mean, she's giving a couple of notes on how to do it. And they were great. We actually used them and she shot it really well. And we sent it off. And then we didn't hear anything for a few weeks. And we're just like, we really want this. We love this show so much. We really, really want that. Who else is going to do this? I mean, maybe they get the actual Property Brothers, but there's got to be more in the script. And in the very beginning, no spoiler alerts. Should we give it? I mean, I think we can.
it was just the very beginning of the thing. And like at the very beginning, the way we divided it up, the way it just felt right, his character like gets killed, which you're like, oh, you'll come back as a vampire.
Yeah, that's what it does.
Got bit by a vampire. I'm like, I'm coming back.
Right.
I'll be a vampire. This is amazing.
Then you get into the show
and I'm like,
you get up there and then like his character is just dead. So my character then like I try and redo the whole house, like redo the house, but befriend Matt Berry's character. And so there's like a crazy turn at the very end. I don't want to give away that like that I'm not who I am. I become someone else. And I've been someone else all along. And so the point is, it was like the best exercise ever, because the more of a good friend I am to Matt Berry, the shittier it is when it turns at the end. So we're improvising all this stuff. And these guys are great.
Improvise while filming or in rehearsal?
Yeah, so you do the lines and you do what you're supposed
to do. And like, then the director, Yana Gorskaya, who's amazing, who's like Taika Waititi's right-hand person, edited all of his movies.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so like, she's an unbelievable director. Like one of the best directors we've ever, classy, knows the stuff, knows comedy.
Laughs.
Just gives it up. She's just soft-spoken and just perfect director, like perfect. And she's like, all right, let's do a fun one. And I just remember improvising one where like Natasha Demetrio is hypnotizing me to not remember what I've just seen, you know, that I did saw him.
And she's asking you questions.
She's like, who else knows? Because there's a film crew filming it. Like, who else is going to see?
Who's going to see this footage?
Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm just going to keep going. I just seen the Anthony Bourdain documentary where his like girlfriend, who was his wife, was giving notes on the edit of like Parts Unknown, and like people were so fucking mad. So I'm like, there's a girlfriend of one of the. One of the producers who gets to see some of the edits. One time, a kid flew a kite into the attic that we were shooting at, and now that kid gives his feedback on some of the cuts. I mean, it was just going on, and no one was saying cut. I'm like, I'm gonna keep going, and I'm like, this shit's not gonna get in, and all of it got in.
No,
they just were great,
and the
whole experience was great. We were up there for
three weeks.
I was up there for a whole month in Toronto.
Toronto,
and they, you know. They shot a bunch of stuff, like our show is like a fake show, which is so funny. They shot like
a produced open. Like, and so like, our show that we had as leads, like Property Brothers, was called Go Flip Yourself. So it's like a house flipping show.
And then they did scenes and stuff. And so then they dropped little scene that characters from their show were watching our show throughout. And the crew of their show was watching our show and betting on it throughout the season.
Uh-huh.
And so.
So they built it to it. And then
we show up.
We show up.
Okay.
And so, like, in the episode before, they actually played a fake promo of our show.
Yeah.
And that it felt like it was a commercial. Like, what is this show?
I mean, that's such a good piece of tape for you guys.
Oh, great.
You know what? One of my biggest regrets in life is that I didn't buy Bitcoin. No. Is that I didn't save all my clips over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Onto like a hard drive and have like a reel that, because I mean, the stuff you guys have done, you've been on Curb.
Yeah.
You've been on
Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul.
Like Entourage.
Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy. I mean, crazy.
And it's like, do you have all that stuff somewhere?
Yeah, we do. Somewhere.
Do you have clips? A lot of that stuff's on YouTube. You can just pull it
off.
But
I mean, is it like on this hard drive and this DVD? God. And
Some.
I mean, I think we had someone put everything together a few years back.
Yeah.
We got to find that. But yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Think about all the early stuff we did, how much fun that was.
So
do you have
fun.
Apartment 2F?
So Mike Royce just sent us the Dropbox with all of the Apartment 2Fs. So we're going to start to...
If people don't know, Jason and Randy did a show called Apartment 2F on MTV in
1997. Pilot was 96.
And it had a lot of people that have since gone on to do... Really
so
interesting.
It was a sitcom with stand up and sketch woven in
short
films woven in the storyline. So here are the stand ups on that show: Patton Oswalt, Jim Norton, Arch Barker, Patrice O'Neill, Bill Burr. Those are the stand ups.
Yeah.
And like Brian Fraser.
Brian Fraser.
Great writer. And Jordan Rubin, great director.
Uh-huh. I mean,
Jordan has my favorite, and I'll say this all the time, my favorite joke about New York. Like, just being in a New York City cab, he's like, it's just crazy, New York City cab. But that's which is a premise that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, it's just.
I was in the cab the other night, and
I said, here, let me out up on the left in that accident that you're in.
That's good.
And he also had a bit where he was, and I did this bit with my, I took my 11-year-old daughter to New York just to see some shows and eat awesome food at the beginning of this year. And we walked by the place where Jordan Rubin used to DJ. And I'm like, that place is
Broom Street.
Yeah, our friend used to DJ here at a club. And she was like, what is that? I'm like, it's like a dance club and all this stuff. But it was like exclusive, like bounce in the front. They wouldn't let people in.
Like, it was like Leonardo DiCaprio was staying at the Soho Grand and would like
go
hang
there.
And
like De Niro's in there hanging out. And Jordan's joke was the club was so exclusive, I was DJing, but I wasn't allowed to be in there.
So our joke is that he took the claw from the like, Korean, you know, delis. The Korean delis where they try and get stuff on the top shelf is like a tool. And I was like, that's how you had to change the records through the door. You weren't allowed
me physically acting that out was making my daughter laugh
that's
so
hilarious.
Hard.
Get the claw on the side I'm window, flip the record.
Cut up the line of coke. Long straw. Hey, I remember I did a show on somewhere in Soho. And it was one of those gigs where somebody hits you up at the Comedy Cellar and goes, hey, you want to make $50? And you're like, whatever.
Sure, why not?
So I go down and I walk on stage and it's all supermodels.
Yeah.
And I'm single. Mm-hmm. And front row is Leonardo DiCaprio
with my God.
An impossibly young, beautiful anorexic
under
girl.
25, we know that for sure.
Yes. And so she's ignoring me with just a, as Kevin Meaney would say, a puss on her face.
Right. You got to get that puss off your face.
And so I annihilate her because I don't care.
Yeah, right.
Right.
This is my world.
Yeah, that's right.
These are people that are used to it being their world.
Oh, yeah. Right. Nobody ever takes shots at them.
My world.
Right.
And I annihilate her and he is dying laughing.
Oh, he loves it.
And she gets up and walks away and he was like, hey, what do I? There's eight other girls.
Right.
Like
exactly.
Me.
Right. Like, I'm not going to even, I'm not going home empty handed. That is. Unbelievable. And I, we've seen you before. Like, one of our favorite things that we used to do or watch you do is the Old Largo here in LA on Fairfax across from Cantor's, where you would come on last. And the first like 6 minutes of your set was just ripping on everyone who came before
just
you.
Deconstructing
and
every
people
joke.
Who did well.
Yeah.
But the crowd loved it. They couldn't wait for you to come up and just like host
your review of what you had seen.
Right. And I remember like, I shit on Odenkirk once and he never talked to me again.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. Well,
we did Better Call Saul with him, which was a blast.
Unbelievable.
So fun.
He was so cool. Yeah. He was so nice. We showed up on the set in Santa Fe or Albuquerque, and he was like, oh, you guys got this. That's great. And we hung out. Because
it wasn't for twins. It wasn't even for brothers. It was just two guys who owned the music store.
I remember, of course. Yeah.
And so then we're in the back and like while they're filming and like, you know how like you're on shows, you've been on films or TV shows where like they're always like super tight budget, so they have to shoot like 45 pages in one day.
Yeah.
And you're like, we're at this location till noon and then we gotta run over here.
Right.
This show was like so in its like pocket and
like
didn't
food,
have to worry.
The food was good.
The craft service is good.
HBO, every show on was, HBO was like
that. Oh yeah, every good. HBO show was like that. But this one also like that because they just they
loved knew
it.
They were great.
Oh, it wasn't HBO.
No, it was AMC.
AMC.
Oh, right.
But still they were the
Breaking Bad universe. It was Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
So they like took like a whole day to shoot one scene.
Yeah.
And you're like, all day is for our scene, and so then you never felt the pressure to like do it right. And
oh my God! And the director, who's a writer, Tom Schnoz is the guy's name. Unbelievable! So such a smart guy.
How's his nose? Large?
It's actually normal
Not
size.
Okay.
Normal size.
All right.
He's like, just run it with Bob. Like, run your scene. And so we're just talking.
Quiet around. He's like, I want to hear the scene. And so they quiet the set, and he's like, just talk to each
just
other.
Just talk it through a couple times.
Yeah.
And so we're talking it through like we're talking to you right now, and like it's no pressure whatsoever. And he's like, okay, got it. Moving on.
No!
Just from that side.
That's hilarious.
And he
that's like a premature ejaculation.
Oh, my God.
So good.
We were so happy because we had
like. Was it good? He was like, it was so natural.
It was so good. Because
you didn't realize we were
We're filming from up in the guitars. We had like a camera.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's amazing. So all right, it's time for fastballs with Fitz.
Let's do it.
When's the last time each of you apologized to somebody?
Oh, I apologized to my son recently. My son is 16. He got a new car a nicer car than we thought he should have gotten, but he...
You bought him a new car.
No, lease. Releasing lease. A car, and then he contributed enough money to make it what he wanted it to be. We were willing to put a certain amount.
Really?
He bridged the gap.
I like that.
I liked it. So we were like, you got to be careful. You got to be careful. And then that was 2 months ago. He got the license, and then he totaled it a week ago.
He's
it was
fine.
A random thing. He's fine. But my wife and I, who, you know...
His fault.
Yeah. It was his fault. I mean, it was kind of the fault of a car that moved in front of him and then moved away, and then the car slowed down in front of him.
Yeah.
And he tried to get around them, and he clipped the back wheel and airbags up. It was scary.
Yeah.
But he's fine. But, like, my wife and I, when we handle it, we handle things very differently with him. And suddenly, like, once we knew he was okay, we were like, okay, now let's go in on him, because like it's yeah. so now we're on the same page, and she's like, you gotta respect me, and I'm like, yeah, you don't respect anything, and like I'm like,
it's like Flavor Flav,
and
it's
she's like Chuck
man.
D, I'm letting her be Chuck D, I'm like fine with it, she's like, this is our family, it's a killing machine, I'm like, you can kill anyone
machine.
And then she goes, you don't listen to what we're saying, I'm like, yeah, dummy, and she goes,
you said yeah, dummy,
she's like, you
can't say dummy.
What is it, tough crowd?
You can't say, like, you can't say dummy.
I'm like, suddenly
Rickles.
So I'm like, and she's like, you can't say dummy, and I'm like, he's being done. Then it became like 5 minutes on how I'm not talking right, and I was like, wait, I'm out of this whole thing. But so later, after like I cooled down and we realized exactly what happened, I did come to him and I was like, man, I am sorry, I went in really hard, I went so hard, I really feel badly about
yeah.
it. I know you weren't trying to screw it up, and I know
yeah
there will be consequences, but I'm sorry about how I spoke to you.
I think my parents' generation never did that.
Never.
I think that if nothing else, what a change in parenting.
I mean, you're teaching your kid how to then say exactly. you're sorry in other situations when that happens. I always feel that way. I cannot remember what this was for, but like, I understand why our parents were that way too, because there's a moment where someone catches you in something, namely your spouse. Like, I think my wife caught me and like, you were acting this way about this. And I was like, no, I was. I got very like, no, I wasn't. Yeah. No, I wasn't. And I can't even remember what it was. It was tiny.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to own up to it in that moment. I was embarrassed that I was acting the way that I was, because it was stupid. And I was like, and then I just flat out said, I'm sorry. It was the easiest thing to do, but I just didn't want to do it for so long. And finally I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm just going to say I'm sorry. It was such a small thing, and it just changed the tenor of everything. I was
How'd
like,
you feel after that?
So much better.
Yeah.
So much better. So much better. We
It brings you closer to the person.
Totally brings you closer.
Because then you're like, you're just admitting, I fucked up.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Who's the worst feature act that ever opened for you guys on stage? Sometimes, you know, you go on the road, you don't bring somebody, and they just throw you somebody.
So I don't know. I don't remember this person's name.
I wouldn't want you to say their name.
You would.
No,
would
wouldn't.
Not.
He said would
no,
not.
No, I would not want
yeah,
you to
Yeah, so
say
we were up in Portland,
yep,
Oregon.
I would say the same thing.
And this guy was not a bad comic, but he was just wrong for us. Like a bad, yeah, I think he had like his final bit was like
spitting on...
I don't know.
Pussy
spitting on someone's pussy.
Whatever. It was not right for before.
Dirty, 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 to the point where you're like, oh, now we got to like, whatever we're going to say that's even half shocking is not registering
yeah,
at all.
Right.
We're digging out of this hole that this guy did. And it wasn't even that funny. Just the audience was like, what was that?
Yeah.
And Ron Funches was opening for us.
Oh.
At that.
Wait,
at that
he was
new.
He was the feature?
He was the host. That's how new he was.
Oh, okay.
And this other guy was the feature. Uh-huh. And we'd never done this ever, because we never want to do this.
Yeah.
We went to the club manager and we were like, listen, I'm sorry that we're going to ask this. Can we flip-flop? Because Ron was hilarious. Can we flip-flop these two?
Really?
And flip them so that Ron can feature and this guy can host them, and we'll ask him not to do this bit, and it just sucks.
Oh, the other one that was terrible was we were in Dallas, Texas, and at Hyenas, and this guy who was like
the downtown one, you know those three.
Fun,
right?
Great, so, Mockingbird style, yeah. I mean, packed and so good. This guy was like in the green room before the thing. Was talking to us about how he sold so much merch in the last like few nights, because we hadn't been to this one. We were in the other one. They put you in all three, you know, like
yeah.
You did
Plano, then
right.
Fort Worth, and then you come
yeah.
Out.
So we were like, oh, that's cool, and he just keeps going on about how much merch he's selling, and then Randy and I are like, well, we have to sell our merch because we're splitting the money.
Uh-huh.
So we have to sell a certain amount of merch in order to like help add to the thing. So Randy and I are looking at each other. The more he's talking about his merch, and we're like, okay. So he gets up for a second, goes out, and we're like, we got to tell him not to sell
the
merch.
He can't sell his merch after his show. You already had a great
also,
weekend.
You're being
listen
a dick
to him.
And you're bragging like crazy.
Yeah.
So we're like, hey, man, you didn't ask us, and we're headlining, and we don't do this ever, but honestly, we need to be able to sell our merch on this show. And since you've had such a great weekend, as you've talked about,
ad nauseum,
like nonstop, like we're gonna ask that you don't sell merch on this show, just this show, uh-huh. just, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah,
and I think we let him on the Late Show or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So he gets on stage and he does like an extra like 15 minutes. Like I think he did like 32 minutes,
right?
As a feature, uh-huh. 33.
Supposed to do 20.
Yeah. 20. Yeah. We're like, what the fuck? And the crowd was so hot. And we're like, he's taking the whole, you know. And then, of course, we got on stage and it was fine. And
yeah.
we had a great set. And then because he wasn't selling his merch, we sold a ton of merch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so then.
And then we afterwards, like at the merch table, we're like, he ain't selling shit.
Yeah. No.
He is not.
No. Because he did an extra 15
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah,
you can't do that to
right.
me. How dare you?
No, it's tough. I've had shows where like the feature goes, hey, can I sell my merch? And I always go like, I never act like, yeah, sure. I'm always like, yeah, 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 that's fine. I go, just what I ask is just don't be on the same table as me. Like
yeah.
I need a little space between, because I don't want audience members buying from me and then feeling like they have to buy from him
right, yeah.
or not buying from me because then he's standing there.
Right.
So I go a little distance. Like,
yeah.
And then the host goes, I'm selling stickers. It's like, no, you're not. No, you're actually not. You know why? I don't even mind that it turns into a bazaar
yes.
in the lobby, yeah. but I don't like that now each person is taking 2 minutes out of their set
to talk
to do
about
a fucking QVC ad for what they're selling.
Right.
It just takes the flow out of the show.
Do you Absolutely. Do a joke about what you're selling? Because we started to do jokes.
Oh, I kill with mine.
What's your joke? What's your merch joke?
I say, well, you know, I sell pins.
Yes, yes.
And I said, well, I got these pins. They're great. You can put them on your denim jacket or your backpack or just throw them in that drawer that's got the flashlight and the dead batteries in it. That's it. And it's cash only. So don't try to give me Bitcoin or Venmo, and I'll do something local. Like I was in Wisconsin, I went, or a block of cheese.
Yeah,
just
right.
give me the cash.
Yeah.
Uncle Sam doesn't need to know about my little pin hustle.
That's great.
And that's what I do. I only take cash.
It's amazing.
Oh, wow. We say that Randy's daughter just got into the University of Michigan, and they cheer, and we're like, and we have first, and we have merch in the back, and people don't know how they're connecting. We're like, so. What we're saying is,
if we don't sell out of this merch, both of my daughters are going to have to go to Michigan State. I can't. I would rather they go to a women's prison.
And that's a big laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people come out. We had a woman in San Diego. This was the greatest and also the most uncomfortable and also the greatest thing I've ever seen.
She walks out to our merch table, drops
out her purse, and she's like, takes out her credit card, and she's like, I want it. And we're like,
what can we get you? Like, there's shirts
so, and
hats.
I
want to
buy for other people. And we're like, okay. I don't want to tell you what to do.
Well,
but
I don't know how that works. And she then goes to
as people are coming out, she's like,
do you want
merch?
I'm buying merch. Which is like just not a situation that anyone is even.
So a bunch of people are like, we don't want merch. And so we have to see people say we don't want their merch. And then,
no, we don't want that shit.
Kenny, it's fucking what? And so we're like rejected from
feel
like 9 feet away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like all these people are leaving. We're like, she's buying it for you.
And then,
you can throw it away.
And then we're like, she's not doing well. Is it our fault?
I mean, like she. And then Jay and I are like, she could do a better job marketing. Whatever.
Well, maybe she needs a better like approach. Like now we're talking about her approach.
Do we need to like school her on
that? Then some people are like, that's so nice. I will. And she starts buying merch and she buys $500 worth of our merch for other people and herself, and her husband is standing like 8 feet away like, all right
babe. We're like this. And so we're feeling bad, but like she does it, and they're like two rich people
who come to the show, and we're like, can we give you a hug, can we, you know, let's take a picture with you, you're so sweet. Like honestly, like it's such a funny thing. The merch is such a funny thing because Randy, our dad was a traveling salesman,
sold alteration supplies. Remember that?
Yeah,
they sold like Velcro and like needles and thread and shoulder pads and like bra cups.
And the our MTV show got canceled, and then we didn't have work, and we were nervous what to do. And he said, "Why don't you go on a business trip with for me to Washington D.C.?" And so we go to D.C. to like these big malls, and we're walking around in malls while our MTV show is still on the air. And kids are like, "What are you doing here?" And we're like, "We're selling shoulder pads, bitch.
Yeah. Get out of here."
Yeah.
Selling them to who?
To like Taylor's and like Neiman's. Neiman's
and Nordstrom. And
you got a suitcase full of samples.
Sample bags.
And you're walking into department stores.
Dressed in suits.
In like today's man suits, Men's Warehouse. And
I hope this is in the show that you guys are doing.
It's not, but it's such
By the way, that was a joke that got cut from our thing from the VES Awards that I was sad about. We're like, you know, this is welcome to Hollywood's most glamorous night. You know, the fashion here is just incredible. I can't tell you how many, we're just on the red carpet. I can't tell you how many times someone said,
Who are you wearing?
And they're like, Nordstrom Rack. Today's man.
How did they cut that?
They said they don't.
These are successful people who know how to dress. I was like, all right.
But so we were walking around, and Randy and I, after that weekend,
filing.
Ross dress for less.
Filene's basement.
So we walk around, and we get to like stay at some shitty hotel, and we say to ourselves, "We're never doing this. We are not doing this. This is not, as much as our dad wants us to be in this life with him, which I understand. He got into the business. It's a 3-person business. He really dreamed of his sons joining him in this business. We probably would have done well and okay, and it would have been a nice life and great for him. It is not what we want to do. We want to do the polar opposite of this."
Yeah.
Now we are carrying our merch to cities and selling
our merch to people.
We're doing the goddamn same thing.
And I'm sitting behind a microphone interviewing
people.
That's
right.
You become your parent. We are
our
father.
Yeah. All right, listen, the Sklar brothers are coming to your town. They're going to be in Aspen, Colorado.
Yeah, the
March
Aspen
12th.
Comedy Festival. Do you know that thing's happening?
Is it HBO again?
I don't know if it's HBO, but it might just be the Aspen
Comedy
Festival. Wheeler Opera House. Huge theater.
Whoa.
I'm very excited.
And it's March, so you can ski.
Yeah, dude. March 12th.
We'll slide into it so badly.
Detroit, March 13th through 15th. Yeah, and then Minneapolis at Acme on March 20th and 22nd. Some people say it's the best club in the country.
I love it. I mean, so we went to Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. First time we've been there in like 30 years. Had the best shows.
Detroit's back, baby.
It's back.
So back. The most
back. So back. And like the fans were great. The shows were great. So we did that. And then I love Minneapolis. And then 2 weeks later, we're at Comedy Works.
Comedy Works in Denver. You're at the outside of Denver.
South one, which I love.
It's
a
bigger room. You can make a little more money.
Yeah,
do they pay you more when you work that room versus
the outside? We've been trying to craft our deals in such a way that you sell a certain amount of tickets and it switches to a percentage, which is way better for us.
That's the way
way,
you do
way
it.
Better.
That's the way you do it.
So you have more of an opportunity to hit that with more people there.
Hey, look at us. We're all just grinding week to week after all these years.
This is what Patrice, RIP, would say. It's like, I'm just a grind. That's who I am. I'm just going to be grinding this thing out.
But that's how you get better.
Yep.
So when you see a comic, when you see someone who's been like incredibly, that's why Burst's so good. He still goes out and does sets.
Yep.
If you see someone who was like a great comic, but then they get successful, they do movies and stuff, they don't have time to do stand-up anymore, or they don't want to do stand-up because they're like, I don't have to do that grind anymore.
Yeah.
You're not as good.
Right.
We, by our nature of where we are in this business, we have to go out and do it all the time. So we're still sharp, I think.
There's a confidence level that comes from going to the gym, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you got to go to the gym because there's subtleties that people have no idea how many split-second decisions, hundreds of them, are made during a set.
Yep.
And when you're confident because you've been going to the gym, then you can make those decisions. You can make those, like you guys talked about, the adjustments.
Yeah.
The constant.
Yeah.
Am I talking too loud? Am I not moving enough?
Right.
Like little things. Do I hit this word? Do I take a longer beat between these two jokes because right now they're too hot and I got to cool them down because this
is. I mean, the pause is everything.
Like, yeah.
So we were working on our two-man show, which we...
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute.
So we just did it in at Sketchfest at the Gateway Theater.
In San Francisco.
Yeah, we just did a run of it at the Lyric Hyperion here. We have New York investors. The hope is to take it to Broadway.
Really?
Yes.
You got investors?
We have investors.
Yeah, we have people involved.
Look at you guys.
Yeah. So I believe that maybe sometime in the near next year, we have a shot to maybe bring it to New York, off-Broadway, then bring it to Broadway, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
I love this show. I think it's great. But there was one little thing that we kind of added on the show, and literally the pause is everything.
Yeah.
The pause is everything.
The joke was we survived the TikTok ban. Darkest 8 hours of my life.
Yeah, terrible.
Because I was like, what am I supposed to watch I said, what am I supposed to watch while I'm driving? All right, that was my joke. And we're like, put a pause.
And then our buddy, Evan Shapiro,
who's our director, who's directing this. He was like, put the pause in between watch and driving. Okay. So then I said it. Darkest 8 hours of my life. What am I supposed to watch while I'm driving? Yeah. And the pause made it bigger.
Yeah.
It made just what you just said. Yeah, like, do I pause?
Right. Do I pause there? Do I not?
And it's the difference between sometimes no laugh and a huge laugh.
Huge.
And that's why, you know, if you think of a joke, I guess if I were to talk to young comedians, and I do, I actually mentor a couple people.
We have two.
And, you know, and I bring them on the road with me, and I try to get them auditions in town, and I read their stuff. Yeah. But I would say to them, if you had a strong feeling that a piece of material was good and it doesn't work 12 times, do it 13, it 14, because there's a reason why you thought there was something
there. That's right.
You just haven't found the way to communicate it yet.
That's
and
right.
And it's going to be the difference between a word or a pause or an inflection.
Who's the quote? What's that great quote I heard? Winners are losers who haven't quit yet. I mean, that's such a great quote, and it's so right on, and it's so true. It's like you bail on something before you give it its real shot, before you really work every angle of it. Then you might
when the fires were happening here, which were terrible, we tried to find what's even remotely funny about the way we were engaging with this whole thing, which was how much local news we were watching. After never watching, I didn't even know we had local news stations here in LA, but then for like a week, I know everything about like Dallas Raines.
He's
getting his suits tailored. We see the changeover from afternoon to evening, and I can know the difference between that. We know them so well. What we said was it's like hooking up with someone at a destination wedding. You know what I mean? Like something you're spending all the time with. I'd be like, when we come back,
you come back to the mainland and you're like, new TV, who dis?
I do a joke about it. I go, now because of the fires now, like, everybody's depressed except local news.
Right.
Because it's the only time we watch local news.
That's it.
And they know that we're waiting for them. They're like, welcome back to Channel 4 News. We're still fucking here.
Right.
let's go out to Chopper 4 now and take a look at that blaze. How's it look, Dennis? Well, Bill, about an hour ago, the fire was almost completely out. But then as we slowly lowered the chopper to just above the flames, suddenly they're shooting out in all directions. We're back in business. See you at 11.
That's so funny. Like these guys the next week are trying their hardest to
rope you back in.
Like, come on, there's wind in the Inland Empire. I don't give a shit about the Inland Empire. You can see other channels.
We'll let you watch other channels. It's fine to see. We're open.
We're about to shut off the TV, and they're like, I'm pregnant.
You're
like,
no, you're not pregnant.
How do you know it's ours?
It's a pillow. I can see the corners sticking out.
How do you know it's ours?
All right, guys. Thanks again. Love you.
Love you, buddy.
All right.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.